Welcome to the Nutmeg Podcast, a version of the Scottish football magazine for your ears. I'm Daniel Gray, and this is My Favourite Year, a feature last heard in lockdown that we've dusted down and resurrected like a pair of old trousers that just about still fit. Joining me this time to discuss a memorable season of his choosing is the BBC journalist and Queen of the South fan, Giancarlo Rinaldi. Thank you to all of our Patreon supporters and deep gratitude to Hazel Gilder and Stephen Dunn. Join them via patreon.com/nutmegfc. Issue 27 of Nutmeg Magazine is out in March 2023. See nutmegmagazine.co.uk to get yours. Giancarlo, thanks ever so much for joining me here as we bring back My Favourite Year, an old feature from lockdown, and I think was the last time we spoke was lockdown, actually. Remember all that?
I've blotted it all out, Dan. I don't even think of it now anymore. But yeah, no, I do remember it, and I vaguely remember doing that. It's all such a blur now. It seems, you know, I know it was only a few years ago, but in a way, it seems like about 20 years ago. Yeah. The world's changed. Well, it changed so much then, and it's changed so much back again that it seems even more long ago than it actually is.
And actually, a little plug for the next issue of Nutmeg Magazine. You've written many fine articles for us. You wrote about one of your lockdown routines, which was watching the games with family, wasn't it? And the stream and opening the bottle of Chianti became quite a nice routine. When allowed, we had to keep stressing when allowed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, always in line with the restrictions of the day, I should say. But yeah, no, that was, you know, it's funny how you can sort of become used to almost anything. I mean, I love my trips to Palmerston are sort of quasi-religious, I think, but I missed them so much. But when the streams were on, did get into a habit, particularly my father-in-law and my son, who was in the house with me already, sort of purchasing these streams of variable quality and variable commentary from around the country to watch the Queen of the South away games. And we'd watch the home ones too, but that felt more painful because I only live about sort of 15-20 minutes walk from Palmerston, so to kind of have to watch a commentary or watch a video link was quite hard. But for the away games, it was a real boon, because I explain in the piece why I've never been a great away day kind of traveller, maybe one or two games a season. So to suddenly have access to every single Queen of the South away game was great. And as you say, we would crack open a bottle of wine, and then win, lose or draw, really, it didn't seem quite so bad at the end of the day. So I kind of miss those, and I don't really fully understand why we've got the restrictions still in place that wouldn't allow you to stream the delights of Celtic Hearts against Queen of the South to, you know, those that are willing to part with money for it. I don't think it would really kill the crowd at these games, which is obviously what the rules were put in place for in the first place. But yeah, no, I do have a certain nostalgia for those same Saturday afternoons, and you know, I'm only just maybe getting used to the new regime again, where I'm sort of getting text updates or radio commentary or whatever, but no video streaming, which is disappointing.
As we'll hear, family and football are very important to you, and the two often mix. What about your own family background then? Giancarlo Rinaldi, clearly not that much of a Dumfries name. who came over from where, when and why?
Oh, well, it's a complicated story, but I'll give you the simplified version, because otherwise podcast would be about an hour and a half. But my great-grandfather came over to Scotland, didn't like it, went back to Italy. In the interim, my grandfather was born in Scotland, but he went back too because he was just a child. But when he was 16 years old, so in 1936, he came over to Glasgow, and it was the usual story. I think their family there already, the great poverty in Tuscany at that time. He was the youngest of seven children, and he came for, well, he thought he'd come over for a year and make some money and go back home to Tuscany, but these things have a habit of not quite panning out as you hope. And he lived the rest of his life in Scotland. He met my grandmother in Scotland, although she was actually from a little village about 10 miles away in Tuscany, but they met in Glasgow, got married, and moved to Crewe briefly for a while, and then up to Dumfries, and the family settled here. I think what happened was, you know, this town isn't big enough for all these Italians, really. I think, you know, Glasgow wasn't big enough. They kind of spread out across the West Coast, all these businesses taking over kind of town by town. And Dumfries was certainly the Rinaldi town. So my grandfather had a fish and chip shop in Lockerbriggs, which is just on the outskirts of Dumfries. And then my dad was a teacher, but he also went into the catering industry as well. So he had a restaurant for a long time in Dumfries, the Dunhamer. And so I was born and brought up in Dumfries. My mum is pure Scottish, though, so, you know, I've got that side to me as well. My granny was from Langham, the Muckletoon, and my grandpa from Dumfries, you know, so I've got roots on one side of the family that are certainly southwest Scotland. But yes, the name, it's guaranteed to confuse people when you if they see the name and then you make the phone call, they think you're taking the mickey, or you know, vice versa, they hear the voice and then you give them the name. It feels like a punchline every time you deliver it.
So all of that gave you your other team, your Tuscan love, Fiorentina. Has that been a much easier ride than Queen of the South?
Well, I wouldn't really say so. I mean, I wouldn't really say so. I think it's probably been more of a roller coaster, because Queen of the South has probably sort of chugged along at a lower level, really, you know, without the same highs and lows, whereas Fiorentina went from the Champions League to almost going out of existence to the sort of the fourth tier of Italian football. I mean, there was a financial collapse, and it did look for a time as if Fiorentina, as we knew it, might not exist anymore. They were reborn as Florencia Viola, and started again in Serie C2, which, as I say, is like the fourth tier of Italian football. So, and no, I don't think it's been easier. I don't even know, you know, trophy for trophy, I don't actually know that Fiorentina's done any better in my lifetime. The last time they won a league title was 6 months before I was born, so I can't even claim that. And they have won a few Italian cups, to be fair, as I say. So I can remember those, but you know, not a lot of other trophies other than that. So no, I don't think, you know, if you were picking teams to sort of make your life easy, I don't think I did that. And I also think that if you drew a Venn diagram of Fiorentina fans and Queen of the South fans, I think the only crossovers would be myself, my son, and my father. So, you know, it's a pretty elite group, I like to think, we're in the Fiorentina and Queen of the South supporters club.
Both romantic names, though, definitely linked back, and colours, of course. So going back, one of the early outlets for your creativity was an Italian football magazine or fanzine, wasn't it? I'm guessing around the time of the great Fiorentina 7-Up kit, the Battistuta era, possibly, when we were just getting to know Italian football here via Channel 4. You were probably just before that, weren't you? What was the magazine called? And tell us about that.
Yeah, the magazine was called Rigore, not as I was introduced at my old school, Rigatoni, where the chap introducing me got his pasta types and his Italian football terminology mixed up. Rigore means penalty in Italian, which anybody that follows Italian football know is a very good name, because a very common occurrence in Italian football, or the controversies over whether a penalty is given or not. So yeah, I studied languages at Edinburgh Uni, and it was just after that, so 91, as I came out of university, and I'm sure my father was probably, and mother were probably, delighted that they'd spent thousands of pounds on a university education, and I produced a 16-page fanzine with Bart Simpson on the front cover. So that dates it as well, I guess, that you know, the timing of it. But it was quite a good door opener for me in terms of my journalism, certainly in writing about football, because it sort of paved the way to actually, I wrote a book about Italian football, and it was really just by pestering them with Rigore. And it also had a very good team of writers, who a lot of them went on to write for the official Football Italia magazine, because it just happened to coincide. It was just before Channel 4 took on the Italian football, so, you know, it was good timing, really. I'd like to pretend to you that it was, you know, all by design, and that I had foreseen that You know, Gaza would go to Lazio and the rest would be history. But the reality was a bit different. But it was great fun, a great sort of pioneering time sticking this together. And it lasted for 2 or 3 years. And eventually I had to go and get a proper job. And that was the end of Rigore. But I've certainly kept in writing Italian football and writing about football in general since then.
Yeah, absolutely. OK, well, moving on to Queen of the South then. Why did they become your team? Why not the Bright Lights of Stranraer, for instance? And when did you start going?
Well, I mean, I was born and brought up in Dumfries, so it would have been, I mean, and I do like to make my life difficult, but Stranraer would have been really, really difficult. And I suppose, you know, what I told you earlier, the family's journey, I mean, I could have ended up supporting a team in Glasgow, I guess, if they'd never left there. Or even Crewe Alexandra, you know, so it could be, I mean, I still half watch for their results because, as I say, my dad lived there for a couple of years as a boy. But no, there was never really any choice. I mean, my dad growing up was a Celtic fan, so I suppose I could have followed him, but I didn't really feel any great pull towards the Old Firm. And, you know, I've always lived within, you know, Dumfries is not a big place. So, you know, no matter where you live in Dumfries, you're probably only 20 minutes walk from Palmerston. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, I wish I had a better memory, or I wish I had one of these photographic memories like some of my friends have. But I don't really remember the first time, but definitely it would be my dad that would take me to a Queen's game, and quite possibly a midweek game, because he would often work in the fish and chip shop with his dad. So, you know, a Saturday was a busy day, so that was often ruled out. So it would probably be a night game, and it would be in the sort of the mid-70s, I guess. I was born in 1969, so it would be the mid to late 70s, you know, and that was a good team. They certainly got memories of some good players in that side. Alan Ball, the goalkeeper in particular, who played, I don't know, I think it was like 3 million in 48 games for Queen of the South or something. It was like, you know, we thought, when I was growing up, I thought goalkeepers at Queen of the South were like popes, you know, because we had Alan Ball for about 12 years, and then we had Alan Davidson, and it was a shock to me that you could chop and change goalkeepers every other season. But I remember going with my dad, and I remember, I think, one of my uncles being there. I remember the kind of the family feel to that, and the camaraderie, and also like the collective pain, mostly, but sometimes delight, and, you know, and the bright lights as well on a night game at Palmerston. Those floodlights are absolutely brilliant. So I was hooked, really. And, you know, it's been an off on love affair, I guess, because I moved away, I studied away, and lived in Italy for a year as well. So, you know, there were spells where I would always keep up to date with the results, but, you know, I wasn't a regular by any means. But the last sort of a bit for work, because I worked with a local paper as well and covered Queen's games, so a bit for work, and then a bit for buying a season ticket or whatever. You know, the last 10 to 20 years I've been a more faithful Dunhamer than I was in the first 20-25 years of my life.
Yeah. Well, Palmerston got a couple of mentions there, not least those beautiful floodlights. That place is, I would term it, a big character in your life, really, isn't it? What is it you love about that place?
You know, I think it's the shared memories, really. You know, it's a very distinctive place anyway. And, you know, I now work within... it's an old Tesco supermarket that's next to Palmerston Park, so I actually drive past it every day. Yeah. And my son now is playing with the under 18s, so I'm there every other night taking him to training. But it's just, I don't know, I mean, it's not the most beautiful ground in the world, it's quite rickety, really, but I think it's just the thought that that's been where Dunhamers have gone to watch football for, you know, 100 years or whatever. So we've kind of had joy and suffering in equal measure, probably more the suffering down all that time. I can remember when it had the old coup shed opposite the main stand, but, you know, the main stand's largely unchanged. Some would say it could do to change a bit, but you know, it's largely unchanged. And that kind of vista out across Palmerston, although you know the pitch is now artificial and whatever, but you know you've got the two big stands, the two big standing areas at opposite end of the ground, Terregle Street and Portland Road or whatever. And it's just, I don't know, it's just a special place to me, as I say. And it's, there's so many memories of times spent with, as I say, with my dad, with my father-in-law, with my son, with my brother-in-law, you know, all family members and friends. And, you know, just great, 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 great times there, you know. And that, I think, you know, I suppose you go often enough, that's what will happen. We have a gang of cronies to this day that kind of go and sit and moan and talk about food and the meals we've had and the films we've seen and occasionally watch the football. And it's just a great, great place to do that. And, you know, when it is, sorry, it doesn't even need to be full. I think when you get kind of over a couple of thousand people in there, which is unusual nowadays, unfortunately. But when you do, and it's really rocking, it's a great atmosphere as well. It's a lovely place to be.
Okay, so before we move on to the season you've chosen as my favourite year, were there any others you might have chosen?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I hinted earlier that, you know, I was a sort of child of the 60s just, and, you know, so my earliest memories were late 70s. And I did actually, I wrote for there's a book called Falling for Football, which is still available, I think, where I wrote a chapter about the Queen's team of 1980-81, and that was definitely, you know, that was one that could, the memory's not so great of it, but that was the kind of Queen's team that I first remember, and it also was a team that won promotion as well. So, you know, you tend to cherish success because it's quite unusual when you're a fan of a Scottish lower league side. And that was the team, as I say, with Alan Ball and my first real football hero, I suppose, Jimmy Robertson, who was, I think Maverick is the kind of overused term to describe these players, but he was a sort of silky, skilled winger in a more hurly-burly Scottish football of the time, and liked to smoke a big cigar and kind of larger-than-life character. And I think he scored something like 20 goals in that season from the wing. You know, he wasn't an out-and-out striker, but he was just, I thought he was magic. He was the nearest thing to kind of an Italian-style footballer in the Scottish football of the late 70s and early 80s. So you can imagine the abuse that got him from sort of visiting fans and sometimes from his own fans as well, you know, because even to this day, I don't think Scottish football fans always appreciate the kind of the delicate touches or the dribbling, especially if it doesn't come off, you know. Yeah. So yeah, the shouts to sort of to just get it forward and, you know, stop various rude words around with the ball were often there in my head anyway. So, you know, I mean, I loved hearing that coarse language when I would be about 11 years old. So that's great when you hear grown-ups saying rude words, you absolutely love it. But that was one team that I could have, one season that I could have spoken about. And another one would definitely have been the Scottish Cup final season when Queens went all the way in 2008, I think, because that semi-final with Aberdeen I think I've said it before, it's the closest I've come to dying at a football game. It was a lunchtime kickoff, and I don't think we hadn't had much to eat. I think we might have been going for a meal after the game, so it was quite light-headed anyway. And for those that don't know, it was the game that finished 4-3 to Queen of the South, and in the second half, well, there was a spell where it was like a basketball game where one team went up one end and scored, one team went up the other end and scored. And I can remember sort of feeling a kind of a vein pulsing at the side of my head and thinking, I might actually keel over and die here. But I was having so much fun that, you know, I probably would have been quite happy if that had been the case. I mean, I would have liked to have hung on to see them win, but it was definitely, it was also the time I ended up dancing hand in hand with another man as well, because I went to hug one of my good friends, Willie Johnson, who worked for the BBC as well, was at the game. And it was just one of these sort of crazy things where I went to hug him, he went to hug me, and we both had our hands out. So we kind of linked arms or linked fingers and danced around the stand at Hampden that day. So that was a great moment. And obviously, getting to a Scottish Cup final, that's never happened in my life. I don't think it happened before or since. So, you know, that was a special day. That one, you know, didn't end up how we wanted. We lost out to Rangers, but it was still a great day out. So that was definitely a possibility. And the following season when Queens played in Europe, their only European game as well, you know. So those were definite contenders. But the moment you asked me, Dan, really, there was one season in particular that still sticks out in my mind as being the most special for a number of reasons.
Yeah, and that was 2012-13. So in a nutshell, before we take a mazy dribble through that year, why?
Well, it was the first season that my son had a junior blue. They do a thing at Palmerston at Queen's called a junior blue season ticket where kids can get in for it's a pound a game, so £18 for the whole season. And I'd kind of made, I think as a dad, I mean, I've got a daughter as well, I should hasten to add, but it was fairly clear quite quickly that her interest in football was limited. And, you know, and that, because I didn't want to be a male chauvinist father. So, you know, I was more than prepared to take Mia, but her interest was very limited. So, you know, I kind of went all in, I guess, on my son and hoped that he would be interested. But we had a few kind of abortive attempts to go to the football before it really worked out. You know, I didn't view it as a sort of footballing courtship that we went to Annan and he didn't really like it. And then we went to other games and I thought, well, you know, maybe this is just, I'm just going to have to accept that, you know, my son's not going to be as daft about football as me, and that's okay. But thankfully, this was the season when, you know, I got the, I thought, well, you know, for £18, even if we go to one game together, it'll have been money well spent. But as it turned out, we went to just about every home game, and, you know, a couple of away games, two or three away games as well. It was only 6 years old at the start of the season. But I think there probably is a sweet spot for taking your kids to football. I don't know. I suspect it would change according to the child, because there's definitely early stages, and I've seen parents like this, and maybe I've been that parent as well, where you're wanting to fully focus on the football, but your child's not willing to allow you to do that. And, you know, and understandably, because they're only wee, and, you know, and they're distracted by the lights and the people around them, and, you know, can we go home yet, and, you know, and that sort of thing. So that, but this was just the point where Luca was kind of ready to sit through a football game pretty much. So that was special. And, you know, I usually go with my dad, although, you know, he spends a lot of time, my parents spend a lot of time in Italy, or they did particularly then, so they weren't about. But my in-laws were in the process of moving back to Dumfries from Millport, and my father-in-law is a big Queen of the South fan as well from previous times in the town, so he was at a lot of the games as well. And be honest, it's the best football, it's the best results certainly Queen of the South have ever had in my lifetime. It was win after win, and, you know, that I kept having to explain that to my son, that was quite an uncommon occurrence as a Queen of the South supporter.
That's fantastic stuff. And talking about that sweet spot as a parent of when to take your child is really interesting, because my daughter's been to 51 games now with me, and obviously I've kept a list or I wouldn't know that number. But there were times early on when I suddenly realised for the first time in my adult life how long a football match is. Just you'd think nothing we do is 90 minutes. Even a lot of the kids' films we watch aren't 90 minutes, and it's plus half time, I mean. And it is that's a perfect description of it, because you think, have I made a mistake here, as you miss the third goal due to another toiletry? But they're all, it's worth dragging them all the same. Back in that summer of 2012, was there a sense of optimism? Did anything feel any different? Was the club in a particularly good state for what happened next, which was, as you've hinted, a record-breaking season in many ways, I think?
Yeah, no, not at all. I don't think so. I mean, I the memory can play tricks, and other Queen of the South fans might see differently. But we just come off the back of one of the most miserable seasons of watching Queens. They finished bottom of the championship, if it was called the championship then, and with Gus McPherson in charge, and you know, probably a lovely guy, but the football that we were producing, somebody once quipped that it might have been sponsored by Binary because there were so few goals. You know, it was 1-0, 0-0. Although looking back, actually, that's a bit unfair, but there was a lot of chat about, you know, we need to make ourselves hard to beat, and the football wasn't great and the team wasn't great. So no, I don't think there was pre-season any great optimism about, you know, we'll come straight back up. I mean, you know, I think we did think that the third tier was not our natural surroundings, but equally the previous season had been so bad that I don't think there was a general feeling that, you know, this is a great team. But it did quickly transform, it quickly turned around, and you know, it was fairly early on that I think everybody clicked that, you know, this is a special team and this is going to be a special year.
Under Alan Johnston, of course, who I remember in his time at Middlesbrough being brilliant at the start on the left wing, but the shirt was always too big for him, which is something you associate with a young player who comes through, but for some reason it's just baggy Johnston. But Alan Magic Johnston, definitely as a manager that year for you. Looking at the start you went through, it was clear something was going on. Fairly regulation 2-0 win on the first day of the season, a 0-0 at East Fife, but then it just really, really kicked in, didn't it, with several standout results. I mean, 6-0 at home to Arbroath. Maybe it was at that point you walk away thinking this could be a good year, you know. Are you too pessimistic?
Well, yeah, till March? I mean, yeah, you obviously know me. I wouldn't be. I mean, I come from a family where my father wouldn't let them open the champagne at the 1982 World Cup final when Italy were 3-0 up, for fear of the game, you know, with 10 minutes to play, for fear of jinxing it. So you know how superstitious I am. I didn't think it would be as amazing a season as it was. But actually, you know, I can remember being nervous about how good the pre-season was, because I think we won every single game pre-season, which again is highly irregular. And so at that point, I don't know what you're like, but I'm almost like, I prefer a bad pre-season, because I think don't waste good performances at this stage when it doesn't matter. So, you know, I was thinking, this will be typical. We'll win all these games and then we'll go into it with not very good results. But my son's first game, which he'll tell everyone with great, was the League Cup game against Alloa. And we won that 5-2. Mm. And, I mean, down the years, Alloa have been a bogey team for Queen of the South. They still are to this day. And, you know, and I think it's like they're our stalkers or something, because they seem to follow us around. You go up a division, they come up a division. You go down a division, they come down a division. And they're always a hard, hard team to beat. Very well organised, very well drilled, you know, and just, as I say, always seem to find a way to beat Queens. So when that game, I think it went to 2-2, and then suddenly we just, in the last half hour, accelerated away, and I thought, this is, you know, there's something here that is definitely different. And I mean, I think, you know, a wee bit probably it was, you know, comparatively the better resourced team. You know, we'd gone down a division, and I guess we still had some of the kind of fitness levels of the championship or whatever, you know, and the resources, you know, and it wasn't, when you look at the teams that were in the division that year, it wasn't an unbeatable League One that we dropped down into. But then, you know, having said all of that, we then went and beat Hibs in the League Cup. And I think that was the game. I can remember that game thinking, you know, we really, this is something out of the ordinary. Yeah. The wee winger in the team called Danny Carmichael, who tortured Hibs that night. I mean, we'd end up being signed by Hibs and that sort of thing, you know, if they give you a hard time, sign them up kind of theory. but it was one of his best games for Queens, and they were in scintillating form, and you know, and as you say, they couldn't stop winning. They did that, and then another game that I remember pretty clearly was one of the away games, because as I said, didn't go to a lot of away games, but the in-laws were still staying in Millport at that time, so Ayr United was a pretty easy away game. We stopped for a bowl of soup at the Dobie's Garden Centre there and here, that many people will know. Met up with my father-in-law and mother-in-law, who'd come over from Millport, and went to the game, and that was another one. We won 4-2 at Somerset, and we've got quite a good record against Ayr, but you know, that was just I thought, this really is, there's something special about this team. And that was, as I say, that was when I started to think, yeah, they can really, you know, go straight back up and maybe do something special. And you know, Nicky Clark was just scoring goals for fun. I mean, you know, and until Stephen Dobie came along and scored even more goals for fun, I'd never seen anything like that. It was just like everything he touched ended up in the back of the net. So there were some amazing results. I didn't see them all with my own eyes, because I see Luca was still quite small. So, you know, there was a danger, certainly any games that kicked off after kind of 7 o'clock, there was a strong possibility they might fall asleep before the game finished. So I wasn't at the, you know, they knocked Rangers out of the Challenge Cup on penalties, as well as Rangers were going through their kind of turmoil phase and resurrection or whatever. So, you know, but that's still, again, another amazing result. But it was such a good, solid team, and quite a young team. When I look back, you know, I'd forgotten just how many young players there were in that team. I mean, Mark Dernan was brought in to play at centre back. We had Kevin Holt, a local lad, playing full back. And then, as I say, Danny Carmichael, Gavin Riley. There were old stagers too. I think Willie Gibson came back for that season, and then Derek Lyle, a real old trooper, and Paul Burns as well, another guy who was a hero of that cup final team that I mentioned, and also Derek Young, who gave a kind of good solid base to the team. I think he really kind of sorted out, but they played lovely football as well. That was, you know, I mean, we had a return of Alan Johnson to Palmerston, and that wasn't anything like as pleasant and as attractive football, but they really played sort of open, expansive football, and it was great. Even when you went behind, you thought, we'll come back and win this. And I think I can remember a game where somebody got sent off and we went behind, and you still thought, we'll come back and win this, because there was just a confidence there that this team could just about beat anything that you put in front of it.
It's an unusual thing for teams that don't win much to have that confidence, isn't it? Especially going a goal behind. That's a perfect example. And I think the one you mentioned is maybe at home to Arbroath just after the turn of the year. Man sent off early on, but won 5-1 to follow up a 5-1 away win at Somerset again. That is the hallmark of it, isn't it? Just thinking, actually, I'm all right. I'm not tearing my hair out. I'm not... We're going to do something. It's a big transformation in your mentality.
Well, it is. And as I say, this was my son's first season really watching football. So I mean, eventually, I think about maybe around about the turn of the year, he did say to me, look, you can stop saying that, Dad. Because I kept saying to him, it's not usually like this, son. It's not usually like this. And eventually, you know, the six-year-old, and he might have turned seven by then, so, you know, he's getting pretty streetwise by that stage. He said, you know, you don't need to keep telling me, Dad. I've got the gist that this is not the normal fear that you get. But, yeah, no, I think when you support a smaller team, you know, you start the season always with hope, but you know, I think the older you get, the sort of the cruel dose of reality kicks in, and you know that more seasons are going to end in disappointment than end in delight, you know. So, yeah. But this was like you know, I don't know, packaging up Christmas, your birthday, and Easter all into one day, sort of thing. It was absolutely incredible. I did laugh earlier when you mentioned the sort of toilet trips, because that was one of my other sort of lasting memories of the season, was the number of goals that I missed. either taking my son for his half-time pie. He had a real then, which was I think it was chips at home and pies away. I think that was the rule at the time. But anyway, I can remember we went to see them play Edinburgh City in the Scottish Cup, because I've got a lot of relatives in Edinburgh. So we went for a meal beforehand. But I said, Do you want your yeah. So of course I'm down there in the pie queue, and if you look at it, Nicky Clark scored in the 42nd minute. Well, that was the killer time for a goal, because that was pie queue time, or possibly toilet time. So, and I can remember being downstairs. I think you have to go downstairs at that ground to get the pie, and I was in the queue, and we'd gone all that way, and I heard the row, and I thought, don't tell me I'm going to miss, you know, that's going to be come all this way, I missed the only goal of the game, because it wasn't a great game. Luckily, Gavin Riley scored in the second half, so we did get that. But that was kind of par for the course of that season as well, was the number of times I'd be out of the building and there'd be a roar, and I'd know that Queens have scored. But having said all of that, you know, they scored so many goals that season, close to 100 goals in the league. I think they got like 92 out of the 108 points available. It was just nuts. It was crazy. And at the same time, of course, going on this run in the Diddy Cup, as we call it, the Challenge Cup, which is very dear to Queen of the South Hearts, because we've won it a few times and reached the final a few times as well. So, you know, that was the icing on the cake, because I think it was clear by fairly early in the new year that we were going to win the league. So to then have this cup final trip as well was just that was another unforgettable day.
So that started way back in the summer, included an away win at Morton after that, and then the victory at Ibrox was a particularly sweet one, I imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, anything that you get past either of the Old Firm, I don't think I've seen Queens beat Celtic ever. But as I say, I wasn't at the away game, because it just would have been, Luca would have been asleep on the way up to the game. Never mind during and afterwards. So that wasn't going to happen. But you know, to get that result, regardless of how lowly Rangers were sitting at the time, was quite something. I mean, I have been lucky, because I've seen them beat Rangers again at Palmerston when the two sides were in the Championship as well, you know, and that was a very memorable night. And to beat any big name of Scottish football, it's not to single out Rangers, you know, because beating Hibs, we've certainly had a good go at most of the top names in Scottish football, you know. So anything like that, when you support a wee team, you know the odds are stacked against you. You know, it's like fighting a heavyweight with at least one arm tied behind your back, possibly both, you know. So you know your chances are of success are limited. So, you know, to get results like that are amazing. It's always slightly tempered by the fact that you'll buy the papers the next day to read about it, and it'll just be all about the feelings of the big team and no zero credit to your own side. But just the same, you know, you, there's not that many times when you can swagger about in a Queen of the South strip and, you know, have the chest puffed out with pride. So, you know, that was that. And it was quite a tough, looking back, it was quite a tough cup run, you know, for all that we were cuffing teams left, right and centre in the league. All the cup games were pretty close, and the final itself was a pretty dour affair, really, you know, although it was immensely enjoyable if you were a Queen of the South fan.
Yeah. Livingston as well. Did you go across for that one with the boys?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. We're up there. We met took my father-in-law up, and my brother-in-law was there as well. And, you know, and a lot of other family members too were all sitting together with that one. And, you know, I've watched that game back, and it's pretty dire viewing if you were a neutral, you know. I think it was on the BBC. I don't think it'll have broken any records for sort of entertainment index against Partick Thistle. You know, a real dour affair, and it only really sparked into life in the extra time, you know. And I think it would be fair to say, I think Partick Thistle were probably a stronger side, a stronger unit, but Queens by that stage, you know, feared nobody really. And, you know, and when they got ahead, I thought, this is your beauty, this is going to be it. But then, obviously, Partick Thistle got a penalty, and, you know, but then all hell broke loose when that was saved. And Aaron Muirhead, who's a local lad, went kind of head-to-head with Chris Higgins, and then Chris Higgins ended up on the floor. So that was, we thought that was it won at that stage, because Thistle down to 10 men, you know, the job's a good one. But Chris Doolan had other ideas, and, you know, Partick Thistle had a good support up that day. And I remember when they scored, their fans spilling out onto the pitch. And I think, I mean, they must have thought, you know, there wasn't much time left, but they must have thought that our name's on the cup, you know, we've denied them, it's going to a penalty shootout, we're going to win it now. But Lee Robinson had other ideas. I mean, what I'd say in the modern era, the best goalie I've seen at Palmerston. I mean, an annoying kind of guy if you were an opposition fan, I suspect. And he did every piece of gamesmanship possible to put off the Partick Thistle players. My sort of eternal memory of that will be his feet kicking the goalposts to waste a bit of time before they went up. So, as I say, he would have been highly irritating if you were a Partick Thistle fan, but absolutely delightful for a Queen of the South fan. And, you know, to lift a trophy, any trophy, is amazing. I remember having to, you know, run down the stairs with Luca to get him to the toilet, to get him back up in time to see the trophy being presented, because I thought, you know, you don't get many of these. Yeah. So I literally had him under one arm, I think, like, you know, barreling down the stairs and barreling back up like a rolled up carpet under my arm to get him back to his seat so we would see this momentous scene, because that was, as I say, that was the kind of the icing on the cake for that season, really, was to get that trophy, because I think we knew the league was in the bag. But to win a trophy, any trophy, as I say, you know, people, if you support a big team, you can look down on these wee trophies, you know, but to us, it's been a great competition, that the Challenge Cup in all its different names. And so to win that there was just, and as I say, be there with so many family and friends to share the experience was just absolutely amazing.
Mm. So moving into the spring and towards the end of the season, what do you remember of when the league was won, or when promotion was won, then the league was won, and those moments of celebration? What are the standout memories of that period?
Well, it's funny, because I think Queens have got a tradition of winning, of clinching promotion at Forfar. It's like that seems to be so. Again, it wasn't a game that was ever going to be able to get to, you know, certainly not with my son. So it was a curious one, but it was, I remember the scores coming in that day, and it, you know, a wee bit, it was a, I'm not saying it was an anticlimax, but you know, you knew it was coming, but it was still very special. And you know, they rattled in the goals again that day, and I think, you know, I'm quite a nostalgic, or quite, you know, I'm always trying to seize or hold on to that moment. I can remember like when Italy won the World Cup in 1982, standing on the steps of a wee cafe in Tuscany as he just won it, and standing with my dad, and tears flowing down my face because I was trying to drink in every kind of memory of that. And the same, I think I felt the same at Palmerston in the kind of the last game of the season, where you want to say thank you, you know, to those players that that gave you so much pleasure. You know, it's a curious relationship you have because they, you know, they don't know you personally, you don't know them personally, and yet you feel like you do, and you've got such a bond with them, you know. And it was such a good team, and they just had such a great team spirit about them that, you know, so I can remember certainly being at Palmerston on the sort of the closing weeks of the season, and the last game in particular, and just, you know, applauding them off the pitch to try to get across how much it meant. You know, I think the local boys maybe would understand it more, but, you know, I think anybody that plays, you know, lower league Scottish football for a small-ish side knows that it means quite a lot to the supporters to do anything, really, you know, and to do what they did in that season, as I say, to pretty much wipe the floor with everybody in the league, to do well in all the cup competitions, really, but particularly the Challenge Cup, was just, you know, it was something. Magic Johnson was well named because it was magic, and it was a magic team. And when, you know, I look back at the names, and they still make me smile. When I was, before speaking to you, I was just writing out the kind of the classic team lineup or whatever, and, you know, I had a big grin on my face as I was writing it down, because there's so many special memories. And as I say, you can't stop time, eh? That was, I think Paolo Rossi said that after Italy won the World Cup in 1982, he was on the pitch and he said he was happy but he was sad at the same time, because he knew that that was an amazing moment, you know, that would never be repeated. And I had similar feelings. I know it sounds daft because it's Palmerston and it's Queen of the South, and you think, how can you put that on the same level as a World Cup win? But to me, as a Queen of the South supporter, that was just something extraordinary, that kind of alignment, you know, of the stars, to have your son's first season, your father-in-law moving back to Dumfries, your dad being there, your cousins, your pals, whatever, all being there, and that team going on such a tear to produce all those results and those special moments was just, you know, I knew, I was old enough then to be aware that I'd never get another season like it. So I just tried to drink it in as much as I could, and you can't, but it doesn't stop you from trying.